trailed off, staring at the shade of bubblegum pink on the wall. Although it was now pink, it used to be blue. My old room. The room where I broke down and wrapped my hands around Doc's throat. It must have just been a memory. A distorted one, but a memory at that. Never mind. I think my brain is still misfiring. Doe sat the clothes down on the bed. We'll be in the living room when you're done. You need help down the stairs? King asked. Fuck off, I said, giving him the middle finger, which he returned. Welcome home, motherfucker, he grumbled, unable to hide his smile. It was like our version of hugging it out. I love that big, mean bastard. I stared down at the clothes on the bed. A pressed white shirt, khakis, matching pink and yellow suspenders, and bow tie. It was my usual pre-Narnia attire. I ran my hand down the soft, clean fabric, but when I picked up the shirt from the pile, I dropped it back onto the bed as if it stung my hand. I pushed the suspenders and bow tie off the pile and rummaged underneath, opting for a pair of gray sweatpants and plain white t-shirt on the bottom of the stack. I made my way out into the living room, holding onto the railings as I slowly descended the steps, each one becoming easier and easier as my muscles adjusted to the feeling of walking, and I remembered how to put one foot in front of the other again. Voices speaking in hushed tones stopped me before I turned the corner.
I don't know why we lied to him. That was stupid,
Doe said. I could hear the guilt in King's voice when he responded.
What were we supposed to say?
Yeah, Prep, you had a visitor while you were in a coma. And by the way, I don't know who that girl is to you, but you woke up in a panic, almost strangled her to death, and you called her your wife. Also, you kind of freaked the fuck out on Bear, and we're guessing it's because he looks so much like his psycho old man, so he's decided not to come around so you don't flip your shit and try to kill him again?
My entire body stiffened. She was here. King sighed heavily. I peeked around the corner, and his head was in his hands. Doe was rubbing his back, sitting on the armrest of the couch. The two kids were sitting at the table off to the side, picking the crust off their sandwiches and throwing them at one another.
I know it's hard, but we have to tell him the truth. He deserves that much. We're his family. We can't lie to him.
As his family, it's our job to protect him. So we can't just dump all this shit onto his shoulders at once either, King said.
He's already been through too fucking much. I just wish I would have known where he was. He was so close the entire fucking time. So fucking close.
King's voice trailed off. I stepped out into the living room, ready to tell him that it wasn't his fault, and he shouldn't blame himself for not knowing where I was when
she was really there.
Neither King nor Doe saw me limping into the room. King continued.
I mean, this shit's fucked up. How the hell are we supposed to tell him that Grace died?
It was the shock shooting through my system that made me walk right into the coffee table and make myself known.
Shit,
King swore. He stood up and came toward me. I held up my hands and took a step back.
We didn't mean for you to find out,
he started, running a frustrated hand over his hair.
It's my fucking fault.
No, no, I said, waving them off and trying to keep down the bile rising in my throat. My legs again grew shaky, but I stood straighter, not wanting to make them feel worse by breaking down in front of them.
You guys have nothing to feel guilty about. Grace was sick, right? For a long time. I mean, I kind of already figured.
I lied. I was positive Grace would outlive the cockroaches of the apocalypse. She could have been run over by a Mack truck, and I would have put money on the truck having more damage than her. I turned back toward my room, or what used to be my room. I'm just gonna go take a shower, I said, heading back up the stairs.
Preppy, wait!
King called, but I kept going.
He needs some time,
Doe said. With each step back to my room, the threat of losing my shit grew greater and greater. It wasn't until I was behind the closed door when I let the tears fall. And fall they did. I cried for the loss of Grace, my mother in all ways except blood.
The mother who never let me down. The woman who would have let me have it when I'd done something she didn't approve of, but who wasn't judgmental. She loved me for me. She loved all my crazy. She never tried to change me. I never even got to say goodbye. I eventually made my way into the shower, spending several minutes under the water long after it turned cold. When I finally dragged myself out, I went to take a piss and caught a glimpse of my reflection out of the corner of my eye. I turned toward the mirror and faced someone I hadn't seen in a very long fucking time. Someone I used to like looking at. A lot. I wasn't fucking stupid. I knew that after the shit I'd been through that I wouldn't exactly be GQ material. But I also didn't expect to be staring at a total fucking stranger either. I leaned in close to the mirror. I felt around my long, knotted beard with my fingertips and almost lost my shit when they dropped into my severely sunken cheeks. The bones around my dark and hollowed eye sockets protruded out like a fucking caveman. My once hazel eyes, which now looked more like a muted shit-colored brown. At least Grace won't ever have to see me this way. Even when my hair was at its longest, I'd always kept the top long and shaved the sides to show off the tattoos on both sides of my head. Post-torture, the parts that were normally short were grown out well past my shoulders, and for some reason looked much darker than the medium blonde I remember it being. I looked like a skinnier, demented version of Jesus Christ. Walking death. I could count my ribs, something I hadn't been able to do since I was a kid, and suddenly, I was back on the playground again, getting the shit beat out of me by a sumo wrestler of a 12-year-old who entered puberty well before his time. Everything about the pathetic soul in that mirror told a story that didn't bear repeating. My head spun. I grabbed onto the sink for support and lowered my head, staring at the thin ring of rust around the drain. After every single motherfucking thing I'd been through in my life, I'd never considered myself a victim. But a victim was all I saw in that mirror. With one last scowl at my reflection, I shuffled over to the toilet and leaned on the wall, pulling out my flaccid cock to take the piss I'd started to take earlier. But I couldn't help but keep thinking about Grace.
"You are a good person, my Samuel. You're a good boy."
Grace's words rang in my head. "You are loved." Mid-piss, I stepped away from the toilet, spraying urine on the seat and floor. I ripped open the cabinet under the sink. I knelt and my knees crunched loudly, like gravel being rubbed together. I groaned at the odd sensation and the even more awful sound.
"Are you okay in there, Preppy?"
Doe asked from the other side of the door.
"Fine,"
I barked back. Of all people, she didn't deserve my irritation. I instantly felt guilty. "Fine," I repeated, softening my tone as much as I could, although it wasn't much when my teeth were still gritted and I was speaking through the splitting pain burning in my legs and torso.
"Okay, we'll all be out in the living room. So, you know, that's where we will all be when you're done. Waiting for you."
Sadness filled her voice.
"I'm so sorry, Prep,"
she added. I heard the slide of her hand as she ran it down the outside of the door, followed by the light padding of her feet on the carpet, and finally, the sound of the outer door of the bedroom clicking shut. I reminded myself to apologize to her for being such a dick. She didn't deserve me throwing a tantrum just because of what I'd been through. I was just so fucking tired. Tired of laying there in that bed for so long. Tired of wasting fucking time. Tired of not living. Tired of being fucking dead. And maybe I was just tired of being fucking tired. Once I found what I was looking for, I held on to the sink and righted myself to stand back up. I plugged in what I thought was the solution to my problem, waving it in the air tauntingly. "Bye-bye, motherfucker," I said to my reflection. I flipped the switch and swear I saw panic flash in his eyes as the buzzing sound echoed off the walls of the small bathroom. I clicked over to the shave setting and ran the clippers over the top of my head from front to back in one long stroke.
A sense of immediate satisfaction coursed through me as I ran my fingertips over the newly sheared section of my head. I needed to do more. Much more. All of it had to go. I didn't bother to cut the hair with scissors first, so every strip I shaved off burned like I was slowly being scalped. But I didn't stop. I didn't give a shit about the pain. Not anymore. Pain wasn't exactly a new thing for me. However, freedom was. Feeling free from the anger, from the regret. Free from not caring if I could ever be the person I was before all the shit went down. That person was almost as much of a stranger as the fucked up Jesus in the mirror who was in the process of doing some long overdue and much needed manscaping. My head was bloodied and scraped as I worked the clippers over my head again and again. I didn't fucking care. More and more hair dropped down and piled on top of my feet. First from my head, and then from my face when I started on my beard until I was completely clean and skin that hadn't seen the light of day in years was now bared to the world. To me, the satisfaction I felt while cutting it all off quickly turned to disappointment and a sudden sinking feeling. I gripped the sides of the sink and let my head fall with a growl. I'd expected to be staring at someone new. Someone clean. The reality was that I was anything but. Rage burned in my chest, bubbling over to a boil when I realized it was still the tortured-looking man from moments before. Just clean-shaven. And now all the weight loss and scars were on full fucking display. Every lump and poorly healed cut. My once colorful tattoos on the sides of my head were tattered and scarred like tears in my paper-thin skin, matching the many, many ruined ones on the rest of my body. A roar tore from my throat. I reared back and punched my reflection, sending shards of glass to the floor, dyeing the piles of hair with drops of thick red, which also dripped down the center of the cracked mirror. It wasn't enough. I punched it over and over again, my fist burning with the pain of each impact against the glass. I fucking hate you! I screamed at the top of my lungs. Spit flew from my mouth as I wailed and wailed on the mirror until my knuckles were completely covered in red. I fell to the floor as my shoulders shook with rage turned despair. I crumpled into a ball, pulling my knees up to my chest and willed the world to go the fuck away. Willing it all to go the fuck away. I clutched my bleeding hand and went to the only place I felt safe. Deep in my mind to memories so clear and bright, I thought sometimes that they'd never happened at all. I closed my eyes and started to drift away amongst the piles of my stripped identity. I was so far gone down the path that took me to that place that when I heard all of the commotion going on around me, I couldn't bring myself to lift my head to see what it was all about. Not even when the door burst open, the hinges falling off the frame, skidding across the floor. Not even as a cascade of concerned voices, both male and female, shouted above me to one another. Or maybe to me. I couldn't even bring myself to open my eyes when I was carried from the room and placed back in the bed I'd grown to fucking hate because I was already there. Chasing after a girl with dark doll-like eyes, raven black hair, and fuck me bright red lips. "Keep me," she whispers, crooking her finger at me. I felt myself being turned over and inspected for more serious damage I might have inflicted on myself, but I just can't let it happen because that didn't matter anymore. Nothing did. I chase her further and further until the voices around me faded away. But no matter how fast I run, she just runs faster. Soon, I'm not chasing her at all anymore. She's gone. I'm alone, standing on the train tracks, unmoving, staring into the blinding yellow headlight of a train as it grows closer and closer, until it's too fucking late.
Chapter 5. Dre. I was more awake than a college kid with a 7-cup-a-day Starbucks habit. It was the middle of the night. And after a very long day of fighting against the jungle-like backyard, armed with a rented weed whacker and a borrowed lawnmower, I should have been dead to the world. but no matter how much I tossed and turned, I couldn't reach any sort of restful state. Not that night. Not any night since I'd been back in Logan's Beach. The moon glowed orange through the dirt-caked windows. Tired of battling with the Sandman, I decided that Sleep and I were going to have to break up for the time being. I felt around for my glasses and put them on while I sat up with my back against the wall. I powered on my laptop while listening to the overgrown tree branches, in desperate need of a trim, rustling against the roof. I fished a cherry sucker out of my bag and plucked the plastic off the top. Sucking on candy was a weird little trick I'd picked up in rehab that I used whenever I was feeling restless. And that night, I felt as if I was going to jump out of my own skin. With the house being empty of all furniture, the usual creaks and groans from years past sounded as if someone were slowly walking around inside on the hardwood floors, each little noise echoing through the tiny rooms. Brandon was sound asleep in the sleeping bag next to me, lightly snoring in a way that made me think it was adorable, and also want to kick some of his perfect teeth in at the same time. I clicked over to the local buy-owner real estate website and decided to turn my sleepless night into a productive one by scanning the comparable sales in the area to see what else I could do in order to get the most money out of the sale that didn't cost a fortune. With each stroke of the keys and click of the mouse, the thought of selling the house grew from a nagging in the back of my head that told me it was wrong to a sickening thought of how I was going to live with myself after it was all said and done. You don't have a choice, Dre. A noise in the kitchen, like something had fallen, caught my attention. I snapped my laptop shut and looked around the dark room, my eyes taking a moment to focus in the black space after staring at the bright screen. I was used to hearing things at night. Being paranoid and exaggerating sounds in my head wasn't exactly new for me. I looked over to Brandon, who was still sound asleep, and realized it was probably nothing. Finishing my sucker, I reached into my bag for another, but realized that I'd left them in my purse in the other room. Slowly, I shifted out of my sleeping bag and tiptoed down the hall, trying not to cause too many more creaks on the floor so Brandon wouldn't wake up. It was then I saw it. A tall, thin figure standing at the screen door. I opened my mouth to scream, but no sound came out. At the same time, a flash of heat lightning lit up the backyard, and for a brief instant I was able to make out the man wearing a black hoodie with the hood up. My knees buckled when the recognition hit me and fell forward onto the countertop for support. Preppy. The facial hair was gone, his face sunken in, but it wouldn't have mattered if he were standing there with a ski mask covering his entire face. I would know him anywhere. I pushed off the counter and darted for the door, throwing it open with such force it banged loudly as it crashed against the stopper. I stepped out onto the porch, but it was too late. It was empty. I reached inside and hit the switch for the back light. It flipped on just in time for me to catch the rustling of the trees just beyond the fence. With my adrenaline racing, I slipped my feet into my grass-stained keds that I'd left by the door and took the porch steps two at a time. The latch on the fence gate was rusted and overgrown with weeds. It wouldn't give when I tried to open it, so instead I climbed over the small metal fence. It rattled and wobbled under my weight as I jumped down on the other side. The moon overhead was bright as hell, and my only guide as I sprinted through the dark woods. I couldn't help but remember that the last time I was running in those very woods, I was running away from the man I was now heading toward. When I reached the clearing at the end and burst out from under the canopy, the water tower came into view, bathed in the full moon's light. I knew where I was going. Last time I was up there, I was trying to end it all. This time, I had no fucking clue what was in store for me. But I was determined to find out.
Preppy. For the first time in forever, I was outside in the crisp, clean night air in the town I'd lived in and loved my entire life. The sky above me was cloudless and littered with a million twinkling stars. It was the usual 80-plus degrees. Hot as fuck, but with a cool breeze rolling off the bay waters, taming down the humidity that always threatened to make your shirt stick to your skin in South Florida. It was a beautiful night. Perfect in every single fucking way. The kind of day that people up north only dreamed of. It was a tropical paradise some wait their entire lives to experience. And I fucking hated it. All of it. It was too fucking bright, even though it was night. The moon too fucking high. The sky too cloudless. The air too clean. I'm pretty sure there is a special place in hell for people that cursed a beautiful night like that one. Didn't matter to me. I'd already been there. Even the chirping birds flying overhead seemed so loud that at one point when I'd been climbing up the tower, I had to cover my ear with one of my hands, thinking that I was under attack. It was like sitting in a surround sound theater and having seats next to the speaker during a screening of Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. The familiar light scent of salt water wafted into the air. I used to inhale it like a drug that could get me high. But now it made my stomach roll and lurch to the point where I had to clutch my stomach to prevent the rising bile in my throat from spewing out. All because of the stench determined to invade all my senses. The world I came back to was a spinning Ferris wheel of sounds and light, assaulting me at every turn, and I was helpless to make it stop, when all I wanted was to get off the fucking ride I never signed up to be on. Logan's Beach used to be my place. My security blanket. But coming out of the dark and into the blinding light I've been craving for so fucking long wasn't at all what I thought it would be. It was a new kind of hell. I was finally home, and all I wanted was a piece of normality. Well, normal for me. But being there, looking down at the only town that had ever been home to me, I felt anything but normal, and anything but at home. It was right then, in that very moment, while inhaling the clean air I once thrived on that now made me want to vomit. While listening to the familiar sounds that used to give me peace but now echoed through my brain like jackhammers on pavement. It was right then I knew I would never be able to find the kind of normal I used to know. The peace I once had. Not there. Never again. My only hope was to find a new kind of normal. But to me, that thought was scarier than any kind of torture I'd faced at the hands of Chop. Which might explain why I'd sought her out. Although the truth was I had no idea why I went to see her. Fuck, I didn't even know if she'd be there. But once the shock of Grace's death started to set in, I remembered that Doe said Dre had been at the house, and it kept playing those words over and over again in my head on repeat. By the time I realized what I was doing, I'd already snuck out in the middle of the night like some kid breaking curfew. Remembering that the window over the kitchen sink had a broken lock, it wasn't too hard to shimmy the window open and crawl inside. The house was dark. Quiet. Empty. Yet the second my feet hit the floor, I knew she was there. I felt her. All the doors in the hall were shut except for the room at the end, the one that used to be the grow room. It was open, but just a crack. Just enough to see the back of her head poking out of a sleeping bag along the wall beneath the back window. I wanted to see more of her, so I'd opened the door slowly and was about to step into the room when she sighed heavily. That's when I realized she was awake. Slowly, I stepped back out of the room until I was in the safety of the kitchen. I pulled myself up on the counter and crawled out the window I came. I was on the porch about to leave when I saw motion in the corner of my eye. That's when I turned and saw her for the first time in what seemed like a lifetime. I don't know what I expected if and when I saw her again, but I certainly didn't expect to feel like all the wind was stolen from my lungs. She wore a plain white t-shirt just long enough to make me wonder if she was wearing shorts underneath, the hem brushing the tops of her thighs as she walked. Her shiny black hair was pulled into a high ponytail on top of her head. Against the moonlight, it looked so dark it appeared almost blue, like the feathers of a black bird. I'd never seen her wear glasses before, but she wore thick dark frames around her dark eyelashes that she pushed up the bridge of her nose as she shuffled into the kitchen. I couldn't move. I couldn't bring myself to do anything but wonder again why the fuck I was even there in the first place and stand there like an asshole, gawking at the most beautiful fucking girl I'd ever seen. Even more beautiful than I remembered. More
everything than I remembered.
A flash of lightning in the sky caught her attention, and that's when her attention shifted to the door, and she spotted me. Our eyes locked. My aching heart pounded against my chest, and my every instinct screamed, "Go to her." And I was going to. My brain had already sent the message to my leg to move and take that first step, and I was about to when a flash of lightning interrupted my thought, and instead I turned and darted back the way I came, over the fence and through the woods when I realized that I couldn't. I wanted to. I wanted to with every fiber of my white trash being. I just fucking couldn't. That's when my feet moved on their own accord and I found myself perched on the top of the world I once conquered, wondering if I'd ever feel normal again. When the platform rattled, my neck snapped to the ladder that shook as if someone were climbing it. A set of feminine hands appeared, reaching up and gripping the handrail. It wasn't until she was fully up on the platform, dusting herself off, her dark hair blowing all around her face, that she finally spoke.
"You know, if you're looking for a place to jump from, someone once told me that the Causeway has a mostly 5-star rating on Yelp for best places in Logan's Beach to end it all."
Chapter 6. Dre.
"Doc,"
Preppy acknowledged. I knew he was there, yet nothing could have prepared me for the impact of hearing his voice again. It hit me like an unexpected left hook, knocking me off my center of balance. I stumbled, grabbing on to the rusted railing in an attempt to make it look as if it were the height causing my unsteadiness. "Preppy?" I replied, clearing my throat when my voice came out scratchy and high-pitched like a prepubescent boy. There was no mistaking his sharp intake of breath. "I heard you were dead. They had a funeral for you and everything, you know," I said.
"I was never really a rule follower."
"You were never a law follower either, but I never expected you to not listen to the laws of nature. You know, life and death and all that. Most people don't come back from that."
"I'm not most people."
"That I know." Preppy was sitting on the ledge on the far side, cloaked in the shadow of a tower. I could only make out the outline of his frame. There was the click of a lighter, the glowing flame hidden by his hand, as he lit a cigarette and snapped the lighter shut.
"I heard the Causeway is a total tourist trap now,"
he said, responding to my earlier statement.
"I heard everyone offs themselves there. It's too trendy. Every hipster from here to Miami is throwing themselves off that thing. I don't know if you know this about me, but I've never been much of a crowd follower."
"I think I might have heard that somewhere," I replied. I took a step toward him.
"No, Doc. Stay there,"
he demanded. The seriousness in his voice froze my foot mid-step. I lowered it back to the platform and was about to ask him why when he pled softly,
"Please."
Not knowing where else to go, I stepped over to the railing, stopping at the same spot where things could have turned out so much differently for me. I looked over the railing at the ground below.
"Long way down," Preppy pointed out.
"Would have been," I agreed. "But I never found out, thanks to this guy who didn't want me haunting his precious tower. When I lifted my head, I felt suddenly dizzy, and I had to close my eyes and take a deep breath, tilting my chin up to the bright moon and swaying on my feet.
"Steady there, Doc,"
Preppy said, his voice smooth, warming over me like a much-needed blanket.
"I didn't do shit. I followed the girl who stole from Myrna, and by the time I got up here, I saw a naked chick, and I wanted to touch her before she went splat. That's all that was."
Preppy adjusted his position, his clothes rustling against the tower.
"How is Myrna?"
"She passed 6 months ago," I said. "She held on for a really long time, longer than most hang on with her kind of dementia. The funny thing was that when she died, She hadn't been herself in so long that, in a way, I was relieved.
Sorry. For an old chick, she was a pretty fucking great one, Preppy said.
I thought about the way she forgave me after I stole from her, gave me a place to stay, gave me the benefit of the doubt when I didn't deserve it. Yeah. Yeah, she was. I cleared my throat in an attempt to keep the tears at bay. For never thinking I'd talk to you again, this is...
fucking weird,
Preppy inserted. Yeah, I agreed. I was going to say amazing, but weird works too. I wrung my hands together and bit the inside of my lip.
Amazing is just Weird's older, more mature sibling,
Preppy pointed out. I looked to the sky. I had this list of things in my head, a list of things I would say to you if I ever had the chance again, and now...
And now?
Preppy asked, like he wanted to know how that sentence ended. And right now I can't think of a single one of those things, I admitted.
The weather,
he said suddenly. What? I turned toward the shadowy corner, wishing I could see his face again.
When people don't know what to say to one another, they talk about the weather, right? So, shit's kind of hot tonight.
A line of silver smoke from his exhale billowed into the air. Gray smoke on top of black shadows. I swallowed hard. Yeah, it's hot, I said. But if you want to talk news and current events, I've heard there is a stalker on the loose in Logan's Beach. He stands on back porches and glares into the windows of unassuming women.
I think I heard that too. But it was just the window of one unassuming woman. And he's not a stalker.
No?
More like a peeping Tom.
I laughed and stepped toward him again. I could feel the argument on his lips, but before he could speak, I sat down just outside of the dark space, only a foot or so away with my back against the tower next to a white tarp that was littered with buckets and brushes, smelling like fresh paint. Why did you come to see me?
Why did you come to see me?
Was his immediate reply. We were both quiet, probably because neither one of us could answer that question simply.
It's quiet here,
he added. Yeah, it is.
Since I've been home, everything seems so fucking loud,
he lamented. Preppy, what happened to... He cut me off before I could finish.
No, Doc. Not now. Not today. Probably not fucking ever.
I looked over and saw the burning red glow of the cherry burn brighter as he inhaled, wishing it was just a bit brighter so I could catch a glimpse of the lips attached to the end of that cigarette. He must have been looking at me, too.
I like your glasses, he said.
Thanks, I said, pushing them up on my nose. My vision had been a little blurry for years. I always thought it was because of the heroin, or maybe that's just why I didn't care. It wasn't until after I got clean and it didn't get any better that I went and got my eyes checked. I was still in shock when they told me it wasn't the heroin after all. It was just me. I laughed nervously. Guess you're probably surprised I managed to stay clean after all this time.
No. I always knew you'd kick that shit,
Preppy said, the confidence in his voice taking me by surprise. He took a deep breath.
Doc, I have to say this. 4 years ago...
Preppy, no. You don't have to, I interrupted. You're not obligated to say anything about what happened back then. It was so long ago, it's all been long forgotten, I lied.
4 years ago,
he started again with more determination.
I was a complete shit to you. Thought about it a lot since then. Thought I could just push you away instead of dealing with how mixed up I was feeling. I just wanted to send it all to the back of my brain and keep it there. He laughed like he couldn't believe his own words. For years, I thought I was such a badass, because you leaving didn't affect me like it ought to have.
Truth is that it did.
A fucking lot. I just didn't let it show. And for some stupid reason, in my mind, I thought that it was the same as not affecting me. It only took being mostly alone in the dark for months on end to realize how fucking ridiculous that really was. What the fuck happened to you, Preppy? I thought that way for a long time, too, I admitted. And that's one of the reasons I'm here, in town, for closure. I've made so many mistakes, so freaking many.
Did you find it?
Preppy asked.
Your closure?
I looked over to the dark corner and felt his eyes on me when I whispered, "Not even close." I pressed my teeth against my lower lip. I sighed and let my head fall back against the water tower.
"Why not?"
Preppy asked. I looked up at the perfect, cloudless night sky and the thousands of twinkling stars overhead. I closed my eyes tightly. "Because I found you instead." A pair of squawking blackbirds chose that moment to practically fall from the night sky, tangled up with one another. My eyes shot open to the scene playing out in front of us. The birds would separate briefly, only to fly another few feet before colliding together again, talons extended, beaks pecking away at each other. The occasional feather floated down onto the platform. The pair traded blow for blow as they rose and fell in the air like a carnival ride. "You think they're fighting or fucking?" I asked, not realizing I'd spoken the words out loud until it was too late. The mood between us turned more serious. Even the crickets must have realized the shift in energy, because it was as if they'd sensed it and stopped chirping so they could listen in.
"I think you and I both know you can be doing both at the same time."
His words took me right back to when Bear became a tool in our battle of who could make each other feel worse. If there was a winner, it sure as shit hadn't been me. "Who knew that sex could be the ultimate weapon of mass destruction?" I asked, followed by a nervous laugh. I reached for the ends of the sleeves I wasn't wearing so I could pull them down over my hands. I could feel his eyes on me, watching my every move. I shifted left and right, already feeling the indentations of the diamond-plated metal platform taking shape on my butt cheeks. "So, more weather, then?" I asked, needing to break the tension that was winding tighter and tighter in the space between us before it broke.
"More anything else,"
Preppy replied, sounding both relieved and saddened. "Learn anything new since you've been..." I hesitated, not knowing what word to use. "Back?"
"Well,"
Preppy started.
"King and his girl got a bunch of kids now. They rebuilt the garage because there was some sort of catastrophic event that they won't tell me about. But then again, they aren't really telling me shit these days. Bear is hiding from me for some reason. My room is now bubblegum pink and is being occupied by a 6-year-old who likes to come in my room and stare at me while I sleep."
He paused.
"And Grace died."
"I'm so sorry," I said, reaching my hand out to comfort him only to be met with the cold metal of the tower when he skidded back out of reach. I retracted my hand and pulled my knees into my chest.
"Forget the weather. Maybe tell me something funny. Tell me a joke, Doc."
His voice was fading as if he were growing tired.
"I haven't heard one of those in a long while."
I sat for a second, breathing the smell of cigarette smoke and his soap, thinking I was in some sort of dream that was about to end. All of my dreams about Preppy ended abruptly, so if it was a dream, time wasn't on my side. "Knock, knock," I started.
"Who's there?"
I hesitated, almost changing my mind about what I was going to say next,
but I needed to rescue the words dangling from my lips before I woke up from this weird dream and it was too late.
"Who's there, Doc?"
Preppy asked in a whisper. I took a deep breath. "Me."
"Me who?"
he asked, playing along. "Apparently, your wife." Silence. I cleared my throat. "Those papers I left for you?" I started. "The documents you wanted to use to get guardianship of King's daughter? Those were just meant for show, for the lawyers and the judge. But very recently, like very recently, I learned that you filed the marriage license. So in the eyes of the county clerk's office, well, in the eyes of the state of Florida as a whole,
we're married."
Preppy finished, not sounding the least bit surprised. "Yeah," I replied. "We're married."
"Guess I just got confused,"
he said, shifting his position, although I couldn't see exactly how I heard the scraping of metal against the platform, which I assumed must have been a button on his pants.
"All that shit with Max was over my head. Probably thought I was supposed to file them."
He explained in a manner that had me thinking there was more to what he was saying that he wasn't letting on. "He loves you, you fucking idiot. He sent you that letter. He told you he loved you. He filed them because he loves you."
"Why are you back, Doc? Here, in Logan's Beach?"
"When I went home, my dad sent me to rehab. The best in New York. My dad's business had always done all right, so I didn't question him when I asked where the money was coming from to pay for it. And he lied to me and told me his insurance was paying for it." I took a deep breath and remembered the reassuring look on his face when he tried to convince me it would all be okay.
"But it wasn't."
"No, it wasn't insurance. There was no insurance. It was all him. He took out all these loans, first to send me to rehab and then back to school. I cringed because I hated the fact that my father sacrificed so much because of all my mistakes. Long story short, his business is failing. Or, according to the past due notices and demands for payment I've found, it's already failed."
"And?"
"And he's losing his house," I replied. "Because of me."
"That's not your fault,"
Preppy said, sounding a lot like Brandon. "I know," I agreed, although it was a lie. "But that doesn't mean I'm not going to try and do my damnedest to help him."
"You're selling the house?"
Preppy guessed. "Yeah, I'm selling the house." "How did you know?"
"Either I could see where your story was going, or maybe it was that big-ass for sale sign in Myrna's front yard that might have tipped me off," he said. "I mean, the stalker might have seen it when he stalked by."
"I see," I said, my lips turning up into a smile.
"You know those letters I told you I wrote in case of my untimely death?"
Preppy asked. "Yeah?" I froze.
"Well, I kept them up, and I left instructions for Doe. I mean, Ray, King's girl, to send them out for me after..."
I heard him shift, and he stretched out his legs. His black boots were now visible in the light. "Ray came to see me today. I like her," I admitted.
"She did?"
Preppy asked. "Yeah, just wanted to say hi," I said. "So what happened with the letters?"
"Well, I wrote you one,"
Preppy said, lighting another cigarette.
"But I guess I only wrote Dre on the outside of the envelope."
He chuckled.
"No address."
"Why is that funny?" I asked.
"It's funny because Doe didn't want to open it and invade my privacy. When she cleaned out my music collection, like my old CDs and shit, she noticed I had a lot of NWA stuff and old school Dre and Snoop."
okay? I asked, confused as to where he was going and how on earth West Coast rappers played a part in the story.
She told me she held my letter up to the light to see if it had an address inside, but all she could make out was the first line, which said, Doc.
Suddenly, I understood where he was going.
No, she didn't, I exclaimed with a squeal, covering my mouth with my hand.
Oh, yes, she did. She sent my letter to Dr. Dre, the rapper, via the Dr. Dre fan club.
Holy shit! I bent over, holding my stomach so the laughter wouldn't split me in two.
No, Doc, wait. That's not the holy shit part. The holy shit part is what they sent back.
Do I want to know? I asked, leaning in toward him.
They sent me back an autographed headshot of Dr. Dre and...
And? I egged him on, eager to hear the rest.
And a restraining order.
He finished. We both burst out into a fit of laughter. After calming down, I remembered that when I received the letter from Preppy, it was delivered by a courier service out of L.A. I thought it was odd at the time, but had more pressing matters at hand. Like a letter from Preppy. I could recite every word from that letter. I could describe how he slants his letters to the left, and how his Y's dip so low beyond the line they run into the sentence below. So, of course, I remember that my address was on the inside. Whoever must have opened it at the fan club must have had it forwarded to me. He thinks I never received it.
What did the letter say?
I asked, tentatively, after our laughter had died down. I immediately regretted it. It wasn't like he was really going to tell me. I was right. Preppy paused.
Nothing important. You know, this and that. Probably just some stuff about the weather.
After a comfortable beat of silence, Preppy was the one who spoke first.
Did you see what they did to this thing?
He asked, followed by a rap of his knuckles against the side of the metal tower. What do you mean? I asked.
The paint? I guess they finally splurged on something that was able to cover the big black dick I spray-painted way back when. They killed my fucking masterpiece,
he said, and with the new shift in topic, I immediately felt lighter.
Bastards. The shame, I said, feigning shock.
Although they only covered it in the last week or two, because I saw it from the plane when I landed.
You saw it from the plane?
He asked with amazement in his voice.
And they had to go and cover it up. It was like a fucking landmark. Greatest thing to happen to this town since the tourists realized our little slum had a white sandy beach attached to it.
He laughed softly.
It was always good for a chuckle or two when I could see the faint outline of it on the postcards they sell at those little tourist trap shops.
Well, I smacked my hands against my knees and stood up. I rummaged through the paint buckets, feeling Preppy's eyes on me as I bent over to survey the tools at hand.
We'll just need to fix that, then, won't we?
When I turned back around, I was holding a can of black spray paint, presumably what they'd used to darken the Logan's Beach lettering.
So what do you say?
I took the can and made that clacking sound that only spray paint cans made.
Shall we?
Another time, Doc. Come sit back down.
Preppy yawned, and I reluctantly set down the paint and did as he asked, taking a seat in my spot just outside his shadow land.
Did I do that?
He suddenly asked. Realizing I couldn't see him, he added,
Your neck. That was me, wasn't it?
I shook my head. No. I mean, yes, you... Freaked out and went for my throat, but that just left some red marks. That was weeks ago. Those are all gone. I covered the cut on my neck with my hand. But this was from a fight with a weed whacker. In case you didn't already know, I didn't win.
Fuck.
He groaned, sounding like he was in pain. He reared up on his feet in a crouched position, like he was either afraid to step into the light or debating on staying or leaving.
"You don't have to go," I said, my voice a whisper.
A few seconds passed. A horn honked in the distance.
"Will you lay with me?"
he asked, sounding tired.
"Just for a while. I haven't been sleeping for shit."
"Here?" I asked.
"Here. Turn around, on your side."
I did as he asked and laid down on the cold platform onto my side, facing away from him. He slowly moved up behind me, and then I felt him. The second his skin connected to mine, it was like changing a light bulb that had been burnt out for a long time. Bright and electric and warm was what I felt as he draped his arm over mine. His thumb brushed over my hand, and I shivered. He exhaled a deep sigh, as if he could feel the new light between us.
"We're still the same, you know,"
he whispered. I turned my head to ask him what he meant, but he stopped me with his hand, gently turning my face away from him.
"Don't look."
"You don't have to hide from me, Preppy. I've already seen you."
"I know,"
he replied, holding me tighter, and just like that I felt it. The light grew into a full electrical storm. There was a charge in the air, energy all around us. He laced his fingers with mine, and I swear, my heart stopped beating.
"I know,"
he repeated. He exhaled, his breath skating across the back of my neck, his lips against my skin.
"But maybe I'm the one hiding from me."
It was the last thing Preppy said before his breathing evened out. With Preppy wrapped around me, I drifted off shortly after. When I woke up the next day, the sun was high in the sky, its hot rays burning holes in my retinas. I was alone. For a brief moment, I thought it was all a dream, until my eyes adjusted to the harsh light and landed on the newly spray-painted big, black cock, scrawled on the side of the tower.
Chapter 7. Preppy. I was beyond restless. I'd decided that the reason I couldn't sleep was because the mattress was too soft. I slid down to the floor, but I couldn't turn off my mind. I only fell asleep for a short time on the tower with Dre, but it was the deepest sleep I'd gotten besides being in a fucking coma. When I woke up, I spent a long time smelling her hair like the creep I was before, deciding that the big black cock needed to make a comeback. I was happy for her, for getting clean, for going to school, for wanting to help out her dad. No, I wasn't happy, that wasn't the right word. I was proud, but pride couldn't stop the selfish thought that nagged at the back of my brain that missed when Dre was a junkie and a mess, so that I could somehow come to her rescue again. There were two problems with that thought. One, she didn't need to be saved. Two, I was in no fucking shape to be anyone's knight. Fuck, she was so beautiful. Dre didn't need a stitch of makeup. Her long lashes and plump pink lips made her a flawless natural beauty. The new glasses were like a nerdy bonus that brought more attention to her big dark eyes. I wondered if she still wore the 50s style clothes, the heels, and my fucking favorite, the red lips. I rolled onto my back and slid my hand down into my pants as I thought about those lips. I remember what they felt like against mine. I regret never having had the chance to see them wrapped around my dick. I remember what her pussy tasted like more than I remembered what coffee tasted like. The noises she made when she was about to come assaulted my memory. That memory gave way to our first time. The way she fought back against me but loved every fucking second of it when I fucked her by the train tracks. It was then I realized she was almost as sick as I was. That moment of my life was better than any porn reel, and over the years it had been my number one mental image to jerk off to. Yet, after a few minutes, my dick was still flaccid. Not a twinge. Not a fucking spark. I tugged on my balls and rubbed the sensitive strip of skin underneath them. I then brought my hand to my shaft and ran my palm over it, willing it back to life. I took a deep breath and thought about the way Dre's tits bounced in my hand when I fucked her from behind. The way she moaned and tensed her thigh muscles when she was about to come. Not a motherfucking thing. I might have been alive, but my dick was still fucking dead. I released my useless dick and let my head fall back against the carpet, releasing a growl of frustration. It may not have gotten hard, but I needed to come. To release. It was the only way I knew how to rid myself of the lingering bullshit in my brain and try to clear some space for all the other shit floating around up there. You're still healing, asshole. Get a fucking grip, I told myself. When the sun was high in the sky, and I could feel the heat of its rays through the closed window, I finally gave up on both sleep and a hard cock. I made my way out into the living room. The second I took that last step down, I was assaulted by light. I shielded my eyes with my forearms from the onslaught coming through the front window. Using my palm to fight against the blinding rays, I shuffled over to the wall and reached out for the metal string so I could close the blinds, but it wasn't there. Peeking through the slits in my eyes, I realized the long-off white plastic blinds that used to clank together when the air conditioning kicked on were no longer there. In their place was a more modern wooden shutter. I found the crank and turned it, sighing in relief when I again found myself in the comforts of the dark. I blinked rapidly to get rid of the stars still dancing behind my eyes. I thought I was alone until I spun around to find Doe looking up at me from the kitchen. She gasped, covering her hand with her mouth as she looked me up and down, taking in my shaved head and hair-free face for the first time. When she realized she was staring, she averted her gaze down to the messenger bag she was organizing on the counter and cleared her throat.
Do the clothes I brought you not fit?
She zipped up the bag and lifted her eyes to me, doing a better job of hiding her shock at my appearance. Only her dilating pupils gave her true feelings away. I'm good, I said, glancing down at my t-shirt and sweats. I don't need much. When did you guys remodel? I asked, taking in the new wood floors and fresh paint. Even the cabinets were the same, but had been sanded and painted a bright white. Looks like adults live here now, I said.
Which is funny because it's overrun by kids,
Doe said with a smile. She pushed up the strap of her tank top that kept falling off her shoulder.
Preppy, if you don't like the color of the shirt or bow ties, I can get you different colors, or you can come with me to pick out your own. There's this new store called Gents across the causeway with an entire wall of bow ties, but it's only open during the season, so we'll have to wait to go there when it's open again in November. We might have to fight off some tourists for best pick of the new stuff they put out, but it could be fun.
I shrugged. Jeans would be good.
Remember when you bought me that dress for our date?
She asked, using air quotes when she said the word date.
It fit perfectly, and you didn't even know my size. Shit, I didn't even know my size. The skirt I was wearing was from the hooker-ready section of Goodwill, and whatever hooker wore it before me had an ass that went on for days.
Doe lamented with a laugh.
That was a long time ago, she added.
To me, that was yesterday, I said. The smile slowly fell from her face, and she changed the subject.
Did you make a list of things you needed?
I loved that girl like a sister, but the way she looked at me like I was a sad puppy dog with a broken leg was starting to piss me off. It's on the counter. I opened the refrigerator and grabbed a beer.
What the fuck is this?
Doe asked, waving the list around in the air. You asked me to make you a list of shit that I wanted.
I meant, like, groceries.
Doe jutted out a hip. What do you think that is? I popped open the beer on the corner of the counter and cringed, holding a hand over my right ear until the echoing faded. I cracked my jaw like I was popping my ears on an airplane, but I knew that a little jaw popping wouldn't be enough to cure me of my aversions to sound and light. I was like a reverse Helen Keller. I plopped on the couch and picked up the remote, clicking through channels. Doe came to stand in front of me, blocking my view of the screen as she read back my list.
Blow, weed,
The last three seasons of American Ninja Warrior, Non-Shitty Beer, Johnny Walker, Jose Cuervo. She stopped and crumpled the paper. This isn't a fucking shopping list, Preppy. It's a list of felonies. She threw the wad of